Now it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale. Frequently.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belville.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Time for Hour 2. Toker Talk Radio is in effect. Coming to you live from Scottsdale, Arizona, where it's hot. Of course it's hot. It's Arizona, right? We're in the damn desert. It should be hot. Let's see here. Where are we at today? Oh, it doesn't want to tell me. All right. Well, we'll just look it up the other way. Here we are in Scottsdale. And just a reminder, we won't have a live show tomorrow because I will be in the air making my way to Flint, Michigan for the High Times Cannabis Cup in Michigan at just outside of Clio at the Auto City Speedway. Oh, it's only 102 today in Phoenix. Only 102. So not so bad. Yeah, so we'll be out there at the Cannabis Cup in Michigan. Hope to meet some of you there. We'll bring you some of the highlights on next week's shows. And next week, we will be in New York at the Javits Center for the Cannabis World Business Congress and Expo. That'll be taking place Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So looks like Monday, I'll be coming to you from Flint. And Tuesday through Friday, I'll come to you from... I'll say Tuesday through Thursday, I'll come to you from New York because I'll be off next Friday as well on another flight going from New York to San Francisco for the High Times Cup there in San Francisco, followed by the NCIA Cannabis Business Summit and Expo. And then at the end of the month, starting on the 24th and running through the rest of June, I will be off because I will be in Boise, Idaho, visiting my parents for their 50th wedding anniversary. I will be officiating their renewal ceremony because I am now the Reverend Dr. Radical Russ. I'm an official minister in the Universal Life Church. It's a beautiful thing. Let me get to some more political talk here. Interesting post here on Reason.com, our good friend Jacob Sullum. They're asking, is an interview with Hillary Clinton on the Sunday talk shows. And Stephanopoulos, George Stephanopoulos on the ABC show this week with George Stephanopoulos, came out and basically asked her point blank if she believed that there was any sort of individual right to keep and bear arms in the Constitution. Now, of course, the most recent decision on that, the Heller decision, had to do with DC gun control laws, and the late Justice Scalia, writing for the majority, said that there was an independent of being in a militia, there was a right, a personal right to keep and bear arms. George Stephanopoulos asks, do you believe that an individual's right to bear arms is a constitutional right that it's not linked to service in a militia? And so Clinton dodges and weaves, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. And Stephanopoulos comes back and says, And the Heller decision also does say that there can be some restrictions. And again, that's what Scalia said. He said that this individual right isn't an absolute right. You can't just have any weapon. Scalia went to, you know, made it clear in his decision that there could be some limits on this. So Stephanopoulos asked, that's not what I asked. I said, do you believe their conclusion that an individual's right to bear arms is a constitutional right? Clinton responds, if it is a constitutional right, then it, like every other constitutional right, is subject to reasonable regulation. And what people have done with that decision, blah, 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 blah. If it is a constitutional right to bear arms. Yep. All right. Well, we'll talk about that some more. And also when we come back, some scary technology in Oklahoma when it comes to civil asset forfeiture.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Keep your cannabis cravings under control. Feed your mind with CannabisRadio.com.
Play as Ted Growing, expelled botany sophomore and the biggest grower in town, only on Weed Firm Replanted. Available on the App Store and Google Play.
It's a lot of work being the biggest grower in town. Maintaining a room full of plants while dealing with a slew of eccentric customers, from a hardcore partier to the curious neighbor next door.
Is anybody home?
Help me expand my bud business by unlocking new strains, customizing my grow room, and completing challenges that you can't get enough of. Grow your empire so big you can see it from space. Low on funds? Don't worry. Weed Firm Replanted is free to download.
Download Weed Firm Replanted for free on the App Store and Google Play today. Get growing, Mr. Growing. I said palm
trees, make California. Yo, this your boy TJ, Trinidad James. You're listening to Dr. Bina on Cannabis Confidential. LA, what up?
Name James, man. I'm worried like.
People were so excited to see you supporting our industry, and it's so important to see people who are mainstream, who are out there, that people look up to.
That was my first one ever going to, so that was definitely a big deal for me. It's not just, oh man, just come smoke a bunch of joints. It's a lot of science into it. It's way more interesting than a lot of people might think, who look down, per se, on what we enjoy.
Cannabis Confidential, only on CannabisRadio.com. I feel like palm trees make
California. You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Christian convictions are under attack as never before.
Okay, maybe you're high too.
Coming soon to a city near you, Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. Get all your cannabis accounting, legal, and compliance questions answered by their knowledgeable panel of industry experts who want to help your cannabis business boom. Whether you're a grower, dispensary operator, or a newcomer to the field, your cannabis business needs Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. For information on upcoming events, visit CannabisFinanceBootcamp.com.
Remember, friends, there's more to life than marijuana. I just can't remember what it is.
Why'd I come in here?
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. 9 after the hour, and we've got some terrible civil asset forfeiture news to tell you about. Just to catch some of you up, civil asset forfeiture is that odious part of our American judicial system that allows the police to seize the assets of suspects without the probable cause that they actually committed a crime, mind you, but merely a preponderance of the evidence that says that their car, home, or even their cash is the ill-gotten proceeds of criminal activity. Now, civil asset forfeiture has grown to such an alarming scale that last year, for the first time ever, the police stole more money from the people than the burglars did. That's right. More money was seized through civil asset forfeiture by the police than money and goods that were stolen by actual thieves. Just crazy, isn't it? And this has been bad enough as it has unfolded across this country, where we find say, aspiring rap stars driving from Chicago to LA with $12,000 or $15,000 cash, all the money they had saved up to form their rap record label and to get established in the business in LA, get pulled over somewhere in the Midwest. Cops see the $1,500 on a black kid and say, aha, got to be drug money. And then they seize it. And when they seize this money, it's guilty until proven innocent. Remember, there's no criminal conviction involved here in the civil asset forfeiture. They don't have to find weed in the kid's car. They just have to suspect there could have been weed in the kid's car, that that money could have been weed money. And then it's up to you, or up to the kid in this case, to have to go to court, hire a lawyer, spend all that time. Remember, we're talking about somebody who's from Chicago moving to LA, has to find the wherewithal to get back to this Midwestern state, wherever the hell, Kansas, Nebraska, wherever it was. Go back to court two or three times, hire a lawyer, spend all the money necessary to fight for his $15,000 back. That's why the cops don't like to seize the millions and millions from the, you know, from the Wall Street bankers or the big time crooks, because they've got the money to fight for their money. So they just see, you know, 4,000 here, 8,000 here, 15,000 there, and it's not worth your time or money to go back and fight for it. So it's already been bad enough. We've already had people lose their homes, lose their cars, lose their cash through no fault of their own for not being drug kingpins or dealers or traffickers in any way. But now, Oklahoma has raised the ante. What they've got here in Oklahoma is this new device, which is a card reader. And they can use it to seize your prepaid debit cards. So now it's no longer enough for them to find the cash in your car and take that. Now, if they find gift cards or prepaid debit cards, they can swipe those and take all the balance off of those as well. Now, there has been some confusion in the reporting of this story. A lot of people have taken the story to mean that the cops can just take your bank debit card or credit cards and process those and take your money. That's not it. This is what we're talking about, those prepaid debit cards where you put $500 on it, you load it up, and now you got $500 on the card. It's not connected to a bank account. Or we're talking about those gift cards like you get from, you know, Walmart or Best Buy, and you'd put $50 or $60 on those. Still, the cops' justification of this. Now, this is originally a federal technology. Department of Homeland Security started using these back in 2012 against international drug cartels that were using prepaid debit cards to move money. The international cartels figured, hey, cops keep busting our guys with thousands and thousands of dollars of cash. So instead, we'll load the money up onto a prepaid card, or 6 or 12 or 20 or however many. And then those cards are less likely to be stopped. So the feds back in 2012, passed the law and came up with the way to be able to go up against these drug kingpins who were stashing thousands and thousands of dollars on prepaid cards and moving it across the country. But as usual, a law enforcement technique intended for the feds to go after big drug kingpins and terrorists has inevitably trickled down to the local level for cops to be able to enhance their police department budget by busting people with prepaid cards. Now, the Oklahoma authorities promise us this won't be abused. No, they're talking, if we pull someone over that's got 40 prepaid cards taped to the underside of their hood, that's who we want to get. Oh no, we would never just go after the guy that's got a two or three gift cards or a prepaid debit card to go to college. We'd never go after that, right? Yeah, right. You know that's what's going to happen. This is what's happened in every single situation where there's been a technology or there's been a policy designed to go after the big kingpins, the big terrorists. Inevitably gets used by the local yokel county sheriff to try to raise funds for his department. We've seen this in just about every case. The Patriot Act. You remember the Patriot Act? USA Patriot Act? That was right after 9/11. You know, We're going to stop the terrorists with the Patriot Act. We're going to let the government spy on everything. Let them get secret warrants to look at stuff. And that'll help us stop the terrorists. So what happened? Well, those secret warrants, 9 times out of 10, those secret warrants are used in drug cases, not terrorism cases. How about the NSA? Remember the National Security Agency? Edward Snowden revealed through his leaks how the National Security Agency was spying on all our telephone metadata. Spying on our telephone metadata, which isn't the telephone call itself. It's when did you make the call? Who'd you make the call to? How long did the call go on? Which cell towers did the call go through? Metadata. And again, the whole excuse of that was, hey, we'll stop the terrorists. We'll stop the terrorists by figuring out the metadata. Guess what happened with that? It became a program by which the Drug Enforcement Administration, the DEA, would use this NSA data to try to figure out where the drug kingpins would be, where the drug dealers would be, traffickers would be. And then they'd relay that information to the local yokels and then get the local yokels to pull over the tractor trailer or pull over the car or whatever vehicle they suspected was trafficking and then make up an excuse for pulling him over that has nothing to do with the tip coming from DEA, right? You didn't blink long enough, illegal lane change, whatever the hell, right? And then DEA would instruct these local yokels how to proceed with the case, with the prosecution, how to build up evidence in that case to prosecute the guys for drugs and to whitewash any reference to the DEA ever giving them a tip. Yeah, exactly. This is what I like to call evidence laundering. You know, in our system of justice, both the prosecution and the defense have what's called discovery. Somebody gets accused of a crime. The defense can ask the prosecution for all the evidence the prosecution has built up, can ask for all the experts and the witnesses and accusers that are going to testify. And vice versa. The prosecution gets from the defense its witnesses and its evidence and so forth. Both sides get to play on a level field. But under this program that was going on for years and years and may still be going on, under this program, it wasn't a level field. Because the defense attorney would never know about the involvement of the NSA or the DEA in this case. All they'd ever know is that local yokel cop saw a tractor trailer truck, pulled it over for a missed blinking light, you know, not changing lanes correctly. That attorney would never know that the DEA originally gave that tip. And not knowing that that tip was there means that the attorney couldn't go back and find out, did the DEA have probable cause to go collect that information in the first place? Was the proper chain of custody of that evidence followed? Was there any... There's nothing. There's nothing the defense attorney can do. For the defense attorney, that case didn't start until the local yokels got involved, but the local yokels would have never gotten involved if it weren't for the DEA and the NSA. So this Oklahoma debit card reader is just yet another example of well-meaning people in our government faced with an overwhelming fear of the terrorists or the drug kingpins or both. They tend to conflate the two. Just another case of reacting in fear, subverting our Constitution and our civil liberties with the promise that no, 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 it's only for the big bad guys. And once again, we find out that nope, any power you give the government to go after the big bad guys is a power that can be abused to go after you. We'll talk a little bit more about this. We're going to have to take a break, but we're going to talk a little bit more about this and libertarianism in the 2016 election when we return.
Denial ain't just the river in Egypt.
Yes, Johnny Utah in the chat room reminds me, they called that parallel construction. Parallel construction, when you build a case parallel to what the original evidence was, but you whitewash, you launder the involvement of that original tip. Happy 420, everyone.
From dabs to chivas, sativas to indicas, we roll out a whole concentrate of fresh new content every week. It's like going from the greenhouse to the dispensary, cannabisradio.com.
Great websites today need expert web design and development and need to be e-commerce ready and mobile friendly. But building a marketable and profitable website can be an uphill climb. Ready to make your new website or replace your existing website? Think Orange as the new way to get in the black. Orange Hill Development works with Fortune 500 companies and offer the same top quality development service at a fraction of what other providers charge. Brands like Absolute, Carlsberg, and Nestle trust Orange Hill Development. Find out why you should trust your website with Orange Hill. Contact Orange Hill for a consultation today at orangehilldevelopment.com.
NORML stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks are far less than those posed by legal drugs.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Pod 2.0.
It's not your father's Woodstock weed.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. 22 after the hour. Flipping through the internet, seeing some of the headlines. I don't know if you saw this one out of Yellowstone Park. 23-year-old man ventured off of the boardwalk around all of the high-temperature volcanic geysers that are out there in Yellowstone. And he apparently fell into the hottest one. And the authorities now say there are no remains. They found some of his personal effects. Everything else boiled away. Now, it's a damn shame the guy died. But there is a certain Darwin Award to this, isn't there? You're on a boardwalk around pools of boiling hot water and signs that say, stay on the boardwalk, avoid the pools of boiling hot water. I know it's awful for his family and friends and everything, but geez, dude. All right, let me get to some other marijuana stories. This one coming from New Zealand. Top jockey in New Zealand, Chris Johnson, suspended for 2 months over a cannabis positive. The leading jockey on the South Island of New Zealand. And he has an 8-week suspension for testing positive for cannabis on May 24th. He had a reading of 43 nanograms per milliliter, but claimed he did not knowingly use cannabis and could offer no explanation why it was in his system. His trainer believes that Johnson had been spiked. Someone spiked him. He predicted it must have happened on a boozy night in Wellington on May 21st when he could not remember much of the evening and woke up in his rental car around 8 a.m. the following morning. Then he failed the random drug test. you gotta love that, first of all, we're drug testing jockeys? Really? Like, what's the side effect? What's the consequence if we let a bunch of high jockeys on the horses, we're not drug testing the horses. We're drug testing the jockeys, right? Like, I can see the argument if we're talking NASCAR, right? Drug testing. Don't get me wrong. I'm against drug testing in all respects. But at least you can make a logical argument for drug testing a NASCAR driver. Hey, man, you're handling a car that's going 200 miles an hour around a whole bunch of other cars going 200 miles an hour. And not having your best reaction times could definitely be harmful to you, the other drivers, and even the spectators. So I can at least make that argument. What's the argument for drug testing the jockey? Like, the horse isn't gonna, I mean, I can't wrap my mind around this. What is the high jockey going to do that's gonna be so bad to the horse, to the other horses? Hell, the horse racing itself is more harmful. Didn't you see at the Preakness the other week? They had to put two horses down. One of them broke its leg and they just killed it. But yeah, let's not let some 90-pound, 5'1" guy smoke any weed. There can be some harm there. My God. So they suspended him. And so it's bad enough that we're drug testing these jockeys. But for this jockey to say, well, somebody spiked it. Somebody spiked me. Must have been that night when I was out getting plastered fucking drunk to the point where I'm waking up in a rental car, can't remember what happened. Somehow that's of no concern, right? Oh, 92-pound guy, you want to drink until you pass out? Sure, we'll let you get on the horse and ride the next day, no problem. What? You smoked a joint? Ban this man for 2 months. That's crazy. Speaking of marijuana in sports, another great story on Jim McAlpine, the owner of the 420 Games brand, who is opening up the cannabis gym in San Francisco, Power Plant Fitness. He's opening this up with Ricky Williams, the Heisman Trophy winner and NFL leading rusher, Ricky Williams. You can consume cannabis while you're working out at the gym. Great stuff. And I really hope this kind of starts to open up people's minds. And I've always thought that the 420 games was a great way of doing that, a great way for people to come out. Not only do you come out of the closet as a cannabis consumer, but then you go run 4.2 miles. And the public seeing all these people running in the 420 game, they gotta attack that stereotype of lazy stoners. Now, you and I already know that the statistics show that we have better body mass index. We tend to be healthier people. But to the general public, those studies and those stats aren't going to mean as much as actually seeing buff dudes working out who smoke pot, buff chicks working out who smoke pot. And especially when they'll start to see what's really going to be fun is when people who are into this fitness stuff start interacting with other fitness buffs who aren't cannabis consumers. And they start talking about their workouts and how they achieve whatever level they've achieved. Imagine the dude trying to get himself all swole, talking to the big buff dude. Bruh, how'd you get so swole? Man, you got great delts, man. Great lats. How'd you do it? Bruh, it's easy, man. Go down to Power Plant Fitness, get real high, and I start pumping out, man. I just can't wait for those conversations. You know, a lot of that bodybuilding community, they got this, you know, got to eat perfectly. We got to eat this many calories and this many fat grams, and we got to have whey protein powder. They're all really heavy duty into their bodies, right? The more it becomes acceptable to be adding cannabis to that mix among the top level of athletes, professional and just recreational athletes, the harder it becomes to maintain all these crazy stereotypes. It's just amazing to me how quickly this is happening. And it's not too surprising, really. I mean, if you if you think about the fact that a freshman at UCLA right now has never not known medical marijuana. Kid growing up in the LA basin, going to college right now, it's been medical all his or her life. And it's that same, you know, the younger generation has the same attitude toward marijuana as they do toward gay marriage. They can't even understand what the big deal was. I mean, for them, they grew up with, you know, Will and Grace and Ellen and Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. And, you know, every show had a gay character that was in a positive light. And we're going to see the same thing happening for this next generation coming up as what they see growing up in the movies and TV keeps moving away from the drugs are bad. You know, when it used to be whenever there was marijuana portrayed in a sitcom or a family drama or any of these shows on TV, there was always a moral lesson involved. It was always this time on a very special episode of Full House, right? Whatever it was, there'd be, you know, drastic consequences for the person involved with the marijuana. The whole show would be a lesson, right? And in fact, some of those lessons weren't accidental. Some of those lessons were paid for by our government. There was a scandal last decade where they found that federal funds were being used to pay Hollywood scriptwriters to insert anti-marijuana themes into popular sitcoms. So it wasn't always even accidental. But now, when marijuana is featured on a show, it's not even like the evolution had been, right? That first, you know, marijuana, drugs are bad. Whoever's using pot, they're going to get busted. They're going to get, you know, morally beat down. And then the second wave was pot is funny, right? That's what I call like your That 70s Show wave and your Harold and Kumar wave, you know, anywhere from well, I mean, of course, Cheech and Chong started it, but, you know, looking at the 90s, there was this wave, especially I'd centered around That 70s Show, where pot went from being something to be morally offended by to something that was merely a youthful indiscretion. I mean, the way that 70s show would treat their characters using pot wasn't necessarily celebratory. I mean, from the character's point of view, it was. But from the show's point of view, it wasn't necessarily celebrating it so much as remember the 70s, remember how freewheeling it was. Kind of like how Obama looks back at his pot smoking. That was something I did in my youth, but not something for respectable people today. So that was the second wave. And that second wave also, you know, the comedy shows like Saturday Night Live and so forth that would, you know, have a joke from time to time. But now we're in this third wave on in TV and movies where marijuana use isn't the subject of the movie at all or the TV show at all, but merely an attribute of a character or a story. Like, I've seen numerous shows where characters are smoking pot, but there's no like mention of the pot smoking. The pot smoking's not part of the plot. Nothing bad happens to the characters because they smoked pot. It's just a part of their life. It's just a part of the scenery. That's the third wave that we're in right now, where it's just no big deal. And we're seeing a similar third wave with respect to the whole gay marriage thing, right? Where a character might, in passing, mention, you know, a female character in passing might mention her wife or her partner. But it's not a now a very special episode about lesbians, right? It's just, oh, she happens to be gay and has a partner. But then the story goes on and we don't care about that little aspect. So with that in mind, with this generational perspective in mind, I can only imagine in 10 years where we're going to be with acceptance of cannabis, how the generation that's now in their 20s starts to hit their 30s and starts to become in charge of everything. How much longer can this prohibition last? You know, I'm hopeful that within the next 10 years, I'll be obsolete. I won't be necessary. That the acceptance of cannabis will be so universal, there won't be any controversy over it anymore. That's the day I'm working toward. We're not quite there yet. And there could always be some sort of moral panic or crazy change that happens that pushes us back farther than we've made so far. But I don't know. I think demographically speaking and intellectually speaking and societally speaking, I think we're over the hump. I think it just keeps getting more legal from here on out. And that's a good thing. All right, let's take a break. And when we come back, I was telling you yesterday about Sheldon Adelson buying the Las Vegas Review-Journal, forcing the editorial board to switch their tone on marijuana legalization. Well, it seems like not all the reporters got the message. We'll see how long this one keeps his job, or her job, when we return.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Legal to listen to all over the world. We're just not sure about France. CannabisRadio.com.
The National Cannabis Industry Association presents the third annual Cannabis Business Summit and Expo. The most influential business event in the marijuana industry returns for 3 days in Oakland, California. Join your fellow industry leaders and policy influencers June 20th through 22nd for an in-depth educational experience and network with more than 3,000 cannabis professionals. The 2016 Cannabis Business Summit and Expo will feature keynote presentations from California Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom and NUMMI Organic Tea CEO Ahmed Rahim, giving you insight into cutting-edge policy discussions and the most innovative business practices. All this, plus the most comprehensive expo floor in the industry. The Cannabis Business Summit and Expo, June 20th through 22nd in Oakland. Don't miss out. Register right now at CannabisBusinessSummit.com and save 15% off registration using promo code RADIO15. That's CannabisBusinessSummit.com, promo code RADIO15.
Ignite the conversation on some trending topics along the Cannabis Radio social media network. Join our crew of thousands on our Cannabis Radio page on Facebook or at Canna Radio, C-A-N-N-A Radio on Twitter. Plus, look for our Facebook and Google Plus pages for all of our original programs and connect with Dr. Dina, Kyle Cushman, Dr. Mitch Earlywine, Nurse Heather, Doc Rob, the hosts of Gondrepreneur, and more. Connect with the growing Cannabis Radio social crusade at Canna Radio on Twitter or search for Cannabis Radio on Facebook, Google Plus, and Instagram and grow with us.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Only on CannabisRadio.com.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
Pod 2.0. It's not your father's Woodstock weed.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, welcome back, everyone. 39 after the hour. Interesting story coming out of the Las Vegas Review-Journal. We mentioned yesterday how Sheldon Adelson, the Las Vegas billionaire, the man who donated $4.5 million of his own money to help defeat medical marijuana in Florida in 2014, that Sheldon Adelson. Well, Sheldon went and bought the Las Vegas Review-Journal, the leading newspaper in Las Vegas. And for years, going back to 2002, this paper's editorial board has always supported marijuana legalization. They've always opined in favor of marijuana reform. But last December, Sheldon bought the newspaper, and in an editorial this week, the editorial board reversed its position on legalizing marijuana. Apparently, Sheldon took the board to a drug rehab, and that changed their mind, according to the report. That opened their eyes to how deadly dangerous marijuana was, because some people become alcoholics and heroin addicts. Had nothing to do with marijuana, but still. So Sheldon Adelson got them to switch, and I don't think it was the tour to the drug rehab facility at all. I think it was the editorial board realizing they'd be out of a job if they didn't do what Uncle Sheldon wanted him to do. So that's why I'm kind of surprised by this story that's on the Las Vegas Review-Journal today, written by Lauren Linehan. And I don't know if that's a female or a male, because it's spelled L-A-W-R-E-N, kind of like Lawrence would be spelled, so I don't know. But whoever Linehan is, congratulations on the story. It's entitled, Veterans Say Marijuana Helps Ease PTSD and Pain. The Las Vegas Medical Marijuana Association had a tour of a local dispensary and let veterans describe how medical marijuana has helped them. They had one veteran, her name's Christina Alfonso Zia. She uses medical marijuana for her post-traumatic stress. She says, from the time she left the military, I attempted suicide every year. At first, she turned to alcohol, synthetic marijuana, and other drugs to cope. After a while, the opiates don't work, she said. But once she got on medical marijuana, it worked for her. Another veteran, Top Gun Commander Shane Terry, has chronic pain from a combat injury, does not use any other pharmaceutical drugs, uses medical marijuana to relieve his pain. Seth Holycross, an Army veteran, patient that uses cannabis for post-traumatic stress, he says he tried therapy, sleeping pills, antidepressants, and anti-anxiety medication before turning to cannabis, saying, quote, they would make me sick. I couldn't get out of bed at times. I would miss work because of it. I just had to get away from that stuff. End quote. So, a positive story on medical marijuana for our veterans just after the Las Vegas Review-Journal board, editorial board, opined against legalizing marijuana. So, at least somebody's still got some stones out there at the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Thank you, Mr. or Ms. Linehan, for that report. We appreciate it. It's mind-boggling, though, every time we have to bring this up, that we wouldn't let our veterans just smoke pot. I mean, really, obviously, I think marijuana should be legal for all people, right? I don't, even though I would have limits on it commercially, like you couldn't buy it until you were 18, and you couldn't grow it until you were 18, I still wouldn't have criminal penalties, even for minors that are caught with it. I figure if a minor's caught with pot, that's a problem for the family to deal with.